Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the Trump administration's tax overhaul plan from the former chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, Edward Kleinbart. Now a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law, he joins us to discuss his article at Vox.com. The GOP says its business plan will help workers and small businesses. It won't. And the cynical way Republicans are trying to sell this latest giveaway to the 1% of the 1%, claiming it will help the middle class and working Americans. And while this so-called tax reform is clearly a gift to the donor class by the Republicans, these lackeys of the plutocrats are counting on satisfying their political masters by conning their voters into believing they are getting the government off their back, when in fact Trump and the Congress are making ordinary Americans shoulder more of the tax burden so that the already rich can get even richer. Then we'll speak with one of the country's leading experts on taxation who, because of his investigative journalism, has been called the nation's de facto tax enforcer-in-chief. Pulitzer Prize winner David K. Johnston, the founder and editor-in-chief of DCReport.com, whose latest book is The Making of Donald Trump, joins us to discuss how the soulless hirelings of the rich in Congress are trotting out the same tired old trickle-down lies and the real possibility that Donald Trump could be the first American president to do a perp walk in an orange jumpsuit on his way from the Oval Office to a federal penitentiary. Then finally, we will speak with Natalie Hernandez, a Nevada gun violence prevention organizer with Battle Born Progress, a part of a coalition of gun safety activists who successfully passed Question 1 on last November's ballot, only to have the law stymied and the will of the people trampled on by Nevada's Attorney General Adam Laxalt. We will discuss what impact the massacre in Las Vegas on Sunday might have on finally instituting the background check law and whether Adam Laxalt will be punished in his expected race for governor in the 2018 elections. And joining us now is Edward Kleinbart, a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. His work focuses on the taxation of capital income, international tax issues, and the political economy of taxation, including the intersection of tax policy and contemporary politics. He served as chief of staff of the United States Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money. And he has an op-ed at Vox. The GOP says its business tax plan will help workers and small businesses. It won't. Welcome to Background Briefing, Edward Kleinbart.
Ian, thanks very much. And just for everyone's benefit, I want to make sure that they understand that the op-ed is at Vox.com and not at Fox.com.
Well, I doubt whether Fox would run something that you wrote that was in any way critical. They are the Pravda of the Republican Party, the cheer squad of the Trump administration. It's pretty shameless that we have alternative universes in our media in this country where the people who get fake news believe it, and they believe that the media that actually publishes real news is fake news. So I think that's an issue we could discuss forever. But let's talk about this tax plan. Initially, Steve Mnuchin and Gary Cohn waived a two-page tax reform plan, and that was absurd and laughable. Now it's up to 8 pages. The details are coming out from the Tax Policy Institute, I guess, are the leaders in this. But my sense, Ed, is that what this really tells us is that the Congress, and the Republicans in particular, are really serving their donors and trying to con their voters. And do you think they're going to get away with it?
Well, I guess the first question is, do I agree with that assessment? And you know, unfortunately, I have to agree that this is, first, the so-called framework, the 8 or 9 page document, is barely more than the 2 page document, actually 1 page, as I think about it, that was offered a few months ago. Virtually no progress has been made in terms of nailing down a specific proposal, which in the ordinary case would have been accompanied by a revenue estimate and a distributional analysis to see who benefits and who loses. None of that work has been done. But the only thing that you can say with certainty is that the framework, as they call it, that's been proposed delivers the vast preponderance of its tax cut benefits to the most affluent Americans. That is incontestable.
And Donald Trump himself, I believe, would benefit to the tune of about $1 billion.
Well, yes, it's difficult to tell exactly how much he would benefit because he hasn't released his tax returns, but we know that he will benefit because Donald J. Trump Enterprises is a constellation of about 500 so-called pass-through entities where the ultimate owners are taxed, not the businesses themselves, which means Donald Trump and his family. And the framework creates a special sort of tax forgiveness bracket for high-income pass-through business owners at a 25% rate instead of the 39.6 or the 35%, whatever the top rate ends up being. So the only people who care about this new special bracket for pass-through business owners are people with incomes, married, filing joint, over about $234,000 a year, because up to that point, the tax brackets would be 25% in any case. So you're talking about people making hundreds of thousands or millions or tens of millions of dollars a year through their ownership of capital, through being rich and having capital invested in businesses. It's those owners who would benefit from that pass-through rate.
And, of course, the other big lie that they put forth is, again, this idea of getting rid of the estate tax. And they brought up the idea of small businesses and farmers being put out of business by the estate tax. Go ahead.
And, you know, Ian, we're way past the era where a farm means 40 acres and a mule. That's just not the farming industry in America today. Farming is not necessarily a small business activity. The vast bulk of production is a big business activity. And to the extent it's a small business, well, the estate tax today allows a married couple effectively to pass $11 million of value to their heirs tax-free, from the first to die spouse to the second to die spouse, to kids, $11 million goes tax free. That's a pretty good sized small business right there, as to which the estate tax simply does not apply.
So, and of course, there just isn't any evidence, or there's some evidence, I believe, of some family farms, but I think it's less than 80 from what I've read.
It's a very small number. The number of decedents, the dead folks, you know, whose estates owe estate tax every year is in four figures. It's not even in five figures. It's, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 estates a year that actually owe estate tax. The estate tax is a way of asking for some reinvestment in the larger economy by the very most successful and to some extent the very luckiest families in America. It's a tax on the 0.1%, not even the 1%.
And again, I'm speaking with Edward Kleinbart, Professor of Law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. His work focuses on the taxation of capital income, international tax issues, and the political economy of taxation, including the intersection of tax policy and contemporary politics. He served as Chief of Staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money. And he has an op-ed at Vox.com. The GOP says its business tax plan will help workers and small businesses. It won't. So I guess, again, going back to my sense that this is really about how the Congress is basically doing the bidding of the donor class.
Yes.
And trying to con the people who voted for them into believing that they're actually going to get a tax break. And some of the figures I've read from the analysis coming from the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, I think working Americans would get back an average of $60. Is that right? It's, I mean,
yes.
It's ludicrous.
So the only reliable data that we have on the distributional implications of the bill, of the proposal, is the work of the Tax Policy Center. This is just a complete dereliction of duty by the administration to put out something that they call a tax proposal without any of the backup of what it would actually mean to people. But the Tax Policy Center has done so and has found that for most Americans, they will get either very small reductions in tax bills or an increase in tax bills. At every turn, there's a significant minority at every bracket level, basically, particularly in the low six-figure range. There's a significant minority, which means millions of people, who will find their taxes going up rather than down. But when you get to the very top, well, then everybody joins hands and enjoys gigantic benefits. I think the Tax Policy Center numbers are something on the order of 4/5 of the benefits go to the very most affluent.
And this, of course, will blow a hole in the debt and the deficit.
And that's why we should care. You know, there's this argument out there that to focus on the most affluent means that you one is just engaging in an exercise in envy. And that's false. Precisely for the reason you just said, Ian, precisely because this framework would vastly increase the deficit is the reason why we all should care. Increasing the deficit, in fact, is an anti-growth direction. It's going to hurt future growth, not help future growth, because that deficit has to be financed with more government borrowing, which raises interest rates for everybody. And that deficit is ultimately going to have to, is ultimately paid, and it's going to be paid in the form of higher taxes on a future generation. So it's not an exercise in envy to suggest that all of us have reason not to want to raid the Treasury for the benefit of the donor class.
Well, the deficit hawks, Republican deficit hawks, who were ranting about Obama's running up the debt to $20 trillion, now they're being incredibly silent. So are there any Republicans that are sticking to their principles in terms
of... I think you're absolutely right that what we have seen is that the deficit hawks have flapped their wings and flown away. And what we're left with is a stunning silence on the part of thoughtful of any kind of Republican leadership on an issue which is one that under traditional Republican policies and philosophies ought to be front and center. So it's extremely disheartening to see sort of the collapse of any kind of a intellectual honesty or coherence to one of our two major political parties. That's bad for America, you know. It's to have a political party that is simply a shill for a donor class is just not good for America. There are reasons to be a fiscal hawk. There are reasons to worry about is government spending too much money or not. We can all come out with different places, but if all you're going to do is run for Congress and then be a shill for the donor class and unfortunately for the NRA. Well, that's not a political party, you know. That's just a agent of a particular small fraction of the citizenry.
Well, indeed, I think you could make the case that only a handful of billionaires dominate our politics. The Koch brothers certainly have an undue influence over the House, and the only agenda that the House has gotten done since Trump came into office has been effectively the Koch brothers' agenda, crippling the EPA, opening up the tar sands pipeline, opening up offshore oil drilling, etc. And then on the executive branch side, another billionaire, the Mercer's family, are the biggest donors to Trump. And they equally, along with Peter Thiel, have this kind of libertarian idea that you basically don't need government. Get them out of the way. So at the end of the day, what kind of America would it be if the plutocrats got their way? It would seem to me that at the end of the day, the only government service would be the police protecting the mansions of the plutocrats against the mobs outside the gates.
It does. It reminds me of Venezuela. And it is extraordinary that so many millions of voters do not appreciate that that is the implication. Again, I'm not suggesting that everyone has to have the same values that I do, but I am suggesting that you need a political party with some intellectual honesty and coherence and philosophy on one side of issues, how big should government be, and another political party on the other fundamental issue of how big should government be. And they should work, you know, thrash it out each year and come to some consensus conclusions. And that's just fallen apart, And that's really too bad.
Well, you would think that there'd be a little bit of buyer's remorse amongst the people who voted for Trump. And many were just frustrated and angry at government and didn't like Hillary Clinton. There's a hardcore group, of course, that seemed to be completely in the Fox News, Breitbart, Sinclair, Rush Limbaugh bubble that believe everything else out there is fake news and only what Fox tells them, et cetera, is the truth. I think that number is eventually going to go down. But what is it, though, explains that apparent gullibility, that this snake oil salesman who's only been out for himself his entire life, it's so obvious when you see him, at, for example, down in Puerto Rico, no empathy for the people of Puerto Rico. All the time he's talking about himself and what a great guy he is and what a great job he's doing, all of which is absolutely ludicrous. But it's just extraordinarily cynical. And somehow that doesn't penetrate. So what are we dealing with here in terms of working class and middle class Americans voting for plutocrats who rip them off? And is it aspirational politics? Is it clinging to this notion that you too can be a millionaire somehow? This is like the political equivalent of winning the lottery.
It's very difficult, you know, for me to answer that question, except that there seems to be a consistent sort of view that government's good for nothing, that we've lost sight of the fact that government, in fact, can be useful. And if you start from the view that government is a bunch of good-for-nothing leeches sucking away your hard-earned money, then it's easy to sort of fall into some of the rhetorical traps to believe somehow that by cutting corporate taxes that will lead to growth for the middle class and so on, which the conservative organization, like the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, has just put out a thought piece demonstrating how false that particular line of reasoning is. And so really the failure, I think, is one of understanding what government is good for. And for those Americans who have been successful in a financial sense, we have somehow lost sight of the role of luck in our lives. We believe that whatever we earn, if it's millions of dollars, represents a decision by the universe to give us our due because we are that special. And in fact, life is full of moments of luck that have material impact on our lives. And that's one of the great roles of government, is to mitigate the random distribution of bad luck. And once you lose that sense of empathy with other fellow Americans, which is made more forceful by the realization of how important luck is in our lives, once you lose sight of that and think that everything reflects your own merit, and you lose empathy for your fellow Americans, then it's easy to conclude that government exists simply to leech money away from one. I think it's some kind of dynamic along those lines.
Well, Edward Kleinblatt, I thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Edward Kleinbart, a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. His work focuses on the taxation of capital income, international tax issues, and the political economy of taxation, including the intersection of tax policy and contemporary politics. He served as chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and his latest book is We Are Better Than This, How Government Should Spend Our Money, and he has an op-ed at Vox.com. The GOP says its business tax plan will help workers and small businesses. It won't. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back speaking with Pulitzer Prize winner David K. Johnson, the founder and editor-in-chief of DCReport.org.